And I'm going to mute all, and everybody will have the ability to unmute themselves. Feel free to do so if you have any question or comment you want to make, or you can use the chat window. Please remute yourself after asking a question or making a comment so we don't have too much background noise. Contents of the chat window, the deck that is being presented, as well as the audio is going to be posted later on this evening to our website. And so welcome all. And with that, I will turn it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck. Alan, take it away.
Okay, thanks very much, Chris. We have another interesting batch of stuff tonight, I hope. Certainly a lot of different things anyway. I'm going to start off with a follow-up from a question from last week. You may recall that Natalie had asked how to copy a message thread from an Android phone, and I had suggested that you could use Droid Transfer, which is a kind of a two-part app. There's an app for the phone and also an app for the PC, and you can basically very easily communicate between the two devices and copy the material down. And I gave an example of a message thread on my phone, and it worked beautifully. And I noticed that this was a demo version, but Linda pointed out that this little caveat here, I don't recall any restrictions on copying a call log, which was the initial use for this Droid Transfer program. But if you use it for a message thread, then it only copies the first five messages, and you have to purchase the program in order to be able to copy more messages than that. And sure enough, if you check, you'll find that to buy Droid Transfer, it's not an inexpensive Android app. $38, in my view, is a lot of money, especially when this is probably going to be like a one-off for most people. I can't imagine everybody copying message threads continually all the time. And so if you do want to copy the whole message thread, this isn't a particularly good way to do it. And, you know, I'm always big on free software, open source software especially. So I dug around and looked for something else, and I found this website which had an article on how to copy the entire thread in Android. And one of the suggestions was to use this app called Textra. And if you look at the app, then you'll find that basically it's a messaging app, and it's a replacement for the stock Android app. So when you install Textra, you actually have to replace the messaging app on your phone and use Textra. However, you can do this on a one-off kind of basis just to copy the message thread. The good news is that the developers say that all the features are free. And you might see ads, so it's ad-supported, or you can make in-app purchases to get rid of the ads. Get rid of the ads, rather, sorry. And so sure enough, when you download the app and install it, you get this message right here that it has to be the default text messaging app, and so that's fine. You agree to that. Oops, sorry. You agree to that, and then you go to the messaging app, and you basically choose a message thread that you want to download. So I've chosen the same one that I used previously, David, used here. So I selected that, as you can see with a little green arrow there, and then I go up to this menu, the three-dot menu here, and it pops up a menu, and it gives me the option to share this thread, this message thread, as email. So if I do that, then it immediately goes to my email client, and it's sending a message from my default email. I'm sending it to my OPC UG address, and it's added this text here. And it notice down here that it's included a TXT file. So the message thread is now attached to my email as a text file. So here's the email coming in Thunderbird. Same essential text. if I open this text file here and pop it into a text editor, and I use Notepad++, then you can see that it's captured the message threads, got the time date stamps, and the actual text of the messages. And so if you want to copy a huge message thread at no charge on a one-off basis, then this is a much better way to do that. So I leave that for your future interest, anybody who wants to copy message threads from Android phones.
A question, Alan. When you first brought it up, it picks up your existing text messages that were there, or only the ones created using it?
Because you've assigned it to be your default messaging app.
Right. Okay.
So it basically imports all the messages that are already there.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it works really well. Does it copy the graphics? No, I don't believe it. I don't know, because I didn't try it with a thread that has any graphics. Typically, I think most people get messages with just simple text. I know you can have MMS messages with embedded images and videos and that kind of thing. And the answer is, I don't know. I don't know whether it will copy the graphics or not. Okay, so moving on. And Stuart on Android has a discussion for us on an app that he likes. So you're going to talk to this one, Stuart? Yes, you are.
Okay. I was very pleased to read this article on the web the other day. One of the key things that held my interest when I was first looking at Android phones instead of the basic dumb phones was that the potential to have an FM radio built into the device would be handy, walking about and all that. And turns out it wasn't that simple. Motorola does have the ability, most of Motorola's phones do provide a free FM radio app that will work with their phones. But it seems that for many years, carrier supplied phones would have the ability to stream FM radio broadcast blocked. And there's a lot of speculation that this was because they wanted to drive you to stream over their data networks and drive up your expenses. And anyway, there was a lot of speculation. Anyhow, this week I just read that the Next Radio app now has gone back to basics and dropped the streaming model that they were previously using. So all you have to do, and I tried this, so I know it worked, is download the app and deny most of the requests that they make during installation. Is there another slide here, Alan?
Yes, you do.
Yeah, there we go. Deny. So when you're installing it, you just simply say, do not have access to my location. And it may ask you again for a location. You say no. And then there will be a country selection. And instead of selecting Canada, which most of us are in, I believe, you select other. Then you ask for the basic tuner. And boom, you've got a working FM radio in your phone. This should work with tablets too, if they have a data ability built into it. I believe the article said that it takes advantage of the data modem chip, which should have FM tuning abilities in it. And I tried this on my Samsung tablet, which is a Wi-Fi only device, and it said it doesn't work. So again, any cell phone that has got data capabilities, whether you're using data or not, should have this enabled. And you need to have a headphone jack, which is, if you're into the highest end phones, well, they're getting scarce, but most mid-range or basic phones have a headphone jack, and you don't need to use headphones. Anything with a headphone jack and a cable on it will work. You could go to the Dollarama and buy a cheap pair of $1 earbuds, cut the buds off, and jam the headphone jack into the phone, and it will work. All you have to do is go into the settings and say, turn on the speaker. And boom, you'll be using the phone speaker instead of the headphone output. So that's really nice if you want to use the phone speaker. Or if you want to use the headphones themselves, of course, that works really good. One thing that is of interest to me that I hadn't thought about till just now was you can use this as an FM tuner for stereos too. If you don't have an FM tuner built into your home theater or say your car's radio blows up and it's got an auxiliary jack on the dash, you could take an old cell phone and plug it with an extender into the car, and you've got an FM tuner coming out of your car's systems again. So it's free. It works. Gee, what more can I say?
I see in the chat, Tom has posted in some information about streaming radio, and I think that's good, but the point of this was to be using the FM tuner as opposed to using your data plan. And
Correct.
The benefit of this. So that's great.
Correct. Well, if I could add one other thing is data networks don't extend as far as FM radio networks. I've been in many areas where there's no data access, but
you
there
get
is
FM signal. Yeah,
you can get a radio signal, and your phone can pick it up. Yes. It's ironic in a way. You're using the data chip to pick up something that it's not. But it works. That's the beauty of the beauty of the beast. Anyway.
Well, the advantage of using Radio Garden is that you can listen to stations from around the world. So if you like Hawaiian music or if you want to listen to Radio Kiev, you have your choice.
Yep, there's lots of options for that. But again, yeah, it's using your data plan for that. Probably not a lot of data, but it is reliant on your data as opposed to the FM signal. So that's pretty cool, Sue.
I've got to interject. The data streaming services are great, but they don't have every radio station.
Yeah.
I live in a little hillbilly town up in the mountains, and there are a number of local stations that I cannot find on any streaming service.
Yeah.
So, but I can get them on a radio signal, and that will work no matter where you drive. If you're moving around the world, because if you're in a local area that has a radio station that is specific to that area that is not on a streaming service,
yeah,
you'll still get the radio signal.
Yeah.
So it's cool. I mean, and you can subscribe to the streaming service too if you want to pay for it.
Sure.
But anyway. Point taken about the streaming service. Oh, one other dumb thing. Some phones have really good DACs in them. So my point about using the phone has an FM tuner for a home theater system is very viable if you're using something like one of like an LG. LG had some fantastic audio equipment in their phones. I'm not an expert on that. I'm just going off what I read, but professionals said that the LG phones were incredible for their audio. So, anyway, that's my contribution for the night. I'll be quiet now. Sit in the corner.
There is a comment from Bill. He said he uses an app from the Play Store on a tablet, which is called Simple Radio, and it works well. And I checked, and it is a Wi-Fi only tablet, so it doesn't need data. Micheline says the tuner in Motorola phones doesn't use your data plan.
That's right. I said Motorola is one of the few manufacturers that allowed access to the radio.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks very much, Stuart. I'm sure everybody's going to be walking down the street tomorrow listening to FM on their phone. Okay, so we have a share next from Bill. He found a website that talks about free tax return programs, Canadian ones, for the current tax year, 2021. And I just remind everybody, if you haven't done your taxes already, you have about 30 days. Normally the deadline is April 30th, but that falls on a Saturday this year. So they extend the deadline. You have to have it in on or before May the 2nd. And then looking at the back of that website, the free programs are listed here. Studio Tax, GenuTax, Wealthsimple, Taxman, ADV Tax, and H&R Block. The information on the web article isn't exactly accurate. It says free software in the title, but it turns out if you read the blurb for Studio Tax, that's no longer free. It's now a $15 charge to use Studio Tax, and I think you have to pay the $15 before you get to fill in the forms. GenuTax, Bill tells me that he tried that, and it has a couple of options. It has a simple option and something they call comprehensive. And if you fill out the comprehensive, it wants to know if you're a prospector, if you're a fisherman, if you have Saskatchewan business tax deduction. It's just incredibly complicated. And also, even if you go to the simple version, which is more straightforward, when you get to if you have pension sharing with a spouse, it seems as though it only allows a maximum of $4,800 to transfer between the two. So that's probably not going to work for quite a few people. I think Tristan had mentioned using Wealthsimple Tax. That's an online type program. And I have used Taxman for years. Taxman's a program, it's not online. You download it and you do everything locally on your computer. However, this is one of the programs that doesn't support Netfile, even though the website says that they all support Netfile. Taxman certainly does not. And you fill out all the forms and then you have to print them and stick them in an envelope and mail them to Revenue Canada. Yeah, but other than that, it's a really good comprehensive program and pretty easy to navigate. And ADV Tax, I don't know anything about. And H&R Block, I think a couple of people in the club have used that and have recommended it. But again, I haven't tried it.
I've used H&R Block for a couple of years now, and they certainly lean you towards their paid option frequently at the start of the process. But if you keep insisting that, no, you just want the free option, I think a lot of people, I'm not sure at what point you need features that are not available in the free version. I certainly don't fall into that boat. And one of the things they do is they try to convince you, oh, we can fill in your information information, your boilerplate information from last year if you want. Well, that turns out that's a paid option. So if you're willing to spend 2 minutes to fill in your name and address and things like that, you can get away with the free option quite well. And they do the Netfile. I've found it to be quite a good program.
And Tristan says if you have a CRA account, you can use the autofill option, and he says that is a wonderful option.
Yeah,
it's
great.
Bill tells me that you can use StudioTax for free until you try to Netfile, and then I guess that's when they want their $15. Lorraine says she's used Wealthsimple for the last couple of years, and it works well. Natalie says she buys TurboTax that allows for 8 returns on 2 computers, cheapest at Costco. It's not free, and she splits it with somebody else. Tom made a multi-plan spreadsheet for his taxes in 1990. Yeah, I did a spreadsheet too, but it turns out I had to change the spreadsheet every year, so that got boring in a hurry. And Ollie says she's used Wealthsimple for the last 3 years. And Tristan says after you do the autofill, you should check because sometimes it misses an item or two. Good old Revenue Canada. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of options, some free software, some not so free, with different levels of performance, I guess. But the bottom line is, remember, you have to fill in your taxes and submit them by May the 2nd. So you have a month, essentially. Okay, moving along, we have a share from Chris.
Yeah, so tomorrow is World Backup Day. So every March 31st, World Backup Day. So there's lots of information around on the web about encouraging people to do backups. I came across this at the Naked Security blog by Sophos. And they have an article, World Backup Day, 5 Data Recovery Tips for Everyone. And they're pretty good. They go into a little bit of detail. So first, I think, is really, really important. You really have to decide what data is critical and make sure it is protected properly by backups. The 3-2-1 principle really comes down to the fact that your data should be in 3 places. Ideally, your backups should be using 2 different technologies. So if one of them fails on you, the other one probably won't or is not as likely to fail due to the same problem. Don't leave your backups where cyber crooks can find them because they could then have access to just as if they had access to your computer. Encrypt your backups. Ideally, I don't bother with this unless it's off-site. If it's going to be off-site, yes, I ensure that it's encrypted. And at least one of your backups should be off-site. The fifth, I always talk about the fact that you don't do backups for backup's sake. You do backups so that you can restore. So make sure you know how to restore from your backup and that you're going to be able to use it successfully in the event that you actually need it. And the bonus tip, don't put it off until tomorrow. Well, at this time of night, I guess maybe you can put it off till tomorrow. If you don't know how to proceed with doing backups on your computer, sign up for next Monday's Tech Talk, Spring Cleanup. One of the topics in there is going to be talking about backup. Actually, there'll be 2 of the subjects will be talking about backup through that. So sign up for that. Members, you can sign up for free. If you're not a member, you can sign up for $20, and it will include a 1-year membership in the Ottawa PC User Group. And if you do it by tomorrow, you'll actually get 2 years for your $20. So one of the taglines they had on that article was, the only backup you will ever regret is the one you didn't make. And so I encourage everybody to check their backups, make sure that you can recover all your important data in the event of a problem.
Okay, thanks very much, Chris. Good advice and a very interesting way to get a word from our sponsor there. Okay, moving along, we have a question. The question is, how do I install a VPN, NordVPN in particular, as an app on a Samsung Smart TV? Not having NordVPN and probably not a Samsung Smart TV, I don't know. So if anybody knows the answer to that, you can chip in right now, or you can put some text in the chat window, or leave it till later on and come back to us. I don't see anybody jumping in.
Not yet.
Yeah, Bob Walker here. that you, if you go to a website called Troy Point, they have a lot of information on this sort of thing, and loading apps onto things like your Amazon Fire Sticks and onto your smart TVs and everything. So you might be able to get some good stuff there. They have some downloadable guides, and that's TroyPoint.com. That's TroyPoint.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Bob. Right, so if anybody has any other information, we'll come back to that later on. In the meantime, we have another share from Bill, and this one is on an app called Print Friendly. Well, it's not an app. It's a browser extension. And the idea is that you can take a web page and print it, and it will basically optimize the page by removing things like adverts. And if instead of getting 16 pages with sidebars and adverts and pop-up videos, it will clean all that stuff out and give you a reasonable version of the article that you're really interested in. It's available as a browser extension for multiple browsers, and you see there listed Chrome, Firefox, Microsoft Edge, and if you're an Apple person, then Safari. And the way it works, or rather the way you get it from, is you go to the, for Chrome, for example, you go to the web store for your browser, and I just go to the Chrome store and search for print. And then it will pop up a list of extensions. And I actually use this one down here, this one called just Print. But here's Print Friendly up above. And it actually has some nice features. So here is CTV News, the Ottawa page. And I'm interested in this article here from the other day where Highway 417 is going up to 110 kilometers per hour in certain places. But you notice that I've got my ad blocker turned off, and I'm getting ads on the top, in the middle of the advert here, and also down the sidebar. But if I go to my install browser extension up here, this icon, this is the print friendly icon right here. If I click on that, then suddenly by magic, all those adverts disappear. And now I have some options to print and send it by email or save it as a PDF file. And you notice also I can change the line spacing and also the size of the images. So if I do that, let's say I want to save it as a PDF, and I've reduced the size of the images to 75%. So you can see that kind of full page almost ad is now shrunk down, and the second image is coming into view here. And so if I now click on the PDF button and save that as a PDF file, then here it is being displayed in a PDF reader, and it basically comes down to, what, three pages, and basically a very nice copy of the article with none of those extraneous adverts. So those are kind of things you can do with the browser extensions, really quite useful. So thanks, Bill, for sharing Print Friendly. Okay, another question. This is from Natalie, I believe. A friend's going to create videos using a smartphone on one of these gimbal thingamajigs, and she's wondering about using a microphone outside, and she wants something that has a low sensitivity to wind and background noise. And the questions are, what would be the price range if you wanted to get decent quality, good quality? What are the better brands of microphones to use in this purpose? And what are the pros and cons of using wired versus wireless mics with a gimbal? Now, this is a Samsung phone, so there is a jack, so you could use a wired microphone. Personally, I've got no experience with microphones, and certainly not with outdoor ones. So again, if anybody has any input on this, you can use the chat or talk about it later. I don't see anybody kicking in right this minute. And so maybe we'll come back to that later on. Okay, next we have some information from Bob Walker on planning for change. And I think, Bob, you're going to share your screen.
Yeah, I'll do that. And
Bob, I'll paste in all your URLs into the chat window.
Okay, there's quite a few of them in there, so.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. And a lot of them are embedded, so.
Yeah, I picked them out.
Let me. Okay, you getting this full screen?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. But this is the first time I've used Office 2019 on this, and PowerPoint opens up quite differently on my two monitors, so I just wanted to make sure you're getting the right view here.
I don't think we are. I think we're getting the presenter mode.
But you're right. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
Display settings, I think. At the top.
Yeah, that should be the one. There you go.
Okay, good. Okay, so back on February 28th in the OPCOG member forum, Stu Bruce posted, I just came across this YouTube channel and highly recommend checking it out. Some decent tunes with the mission. And he gave the URL for the Playing for Change YouTube channel. So I've been following Playing for Change for several years, and Stuart's post that inspired me to do this Q&A segment about them. For the most part, we tend to focus here on the technology, but Playing for Change is a great example of showing what all this great technology can enable. Now, Playing for Change, they're built on the belief that music has the power to break down boundaries and overcome the differences that divide us, and inspires and unites people through song. And for the past 20 years, they've been discovering unique talent, videoing breathtaking performances and telling amazing stories from all parts of the world. They're a multimedia music project, and they feature musicians and singers from around the world. And a lot of these musicians and singers are street musicians. Playing for Change also funds a separate nonprofit organization called the Playing for Change Foundation. And this builds music and art schools for children around the world. They travel around the world with a small video and recording team. And they've developed a mobile recording studio for capturing the musicians live, usually outdoors, and progressively editing in all the separate artists and blending all of this into one performance as they travel from artist to artist and country to country. They start with a studio demo that's made in the right key and the right tempo, and they say they would deconstruct the track as each recorded musician or singer could listen with headphones to what had been recorded so far and then play or sing the same song in their own style as gets added to the mix. As each song builds up, you know, it usually starts with a single artist, and then more and more come in. The changes in the instruments and the vocalists and everything feels really natural and seamless. It's really, really well done. The sound is always balanced and full, and it gives each musician a great share of the limelight. And the build up to the end, where you get a lot of artists performing at once, is so subtle you barely notice how much bigger it's gotten until near the end. more than 1,000 musicians, many of them street musicians from over 50 countries have combined their talents to create this global phenomenon. And there's millions of followers around the world. Most of the Playing for Change music videos are covers of classic rock songs, folk songs, and then various local and traditional songs. Their first production was a version of Benny King's classic Stand By Me. And the video includes performances from 18 street musicians, including a South African choir. So far, this video has had over 177 million views on YouTube alone, and that's as of today. There's a couple of great videos about Playing for Change itself. One is an introduction to the movement, and the second one is a bit more in-depth. I'm going to try playing the first one now. I'm experimenting here with embedding videos into PowerPoint presentations. So, Chris, let me know if this doesn't show up at your end properly.
Okay. It's looking good.
And I saw this one musician, and I just felt, wow, this guy's unbelievable. All of a sudden, I just had this epiphany of the best music I ever heard in my life.
Sound is weak.
Not in the studio. And that's when I sort of had the idea for Playing for Change, which was to bring the studio to the people. What amazing stories. Grandpa Elliot, he's been a street musician in New Orleans performing for about 60 years. I just was in love with him. I just thought his whole energy was the best. He had a lot more depth. It wasn't just entertainment.
All my life, I've been put out love.
And then I wanted to make it more special than just individual performances. So have musicians from different locations play on the same songs. Stand By Me, I recorded and filmed in about 10 different countries. 60 million people watching that has an impact. It's a global project.
We seem to have frozen there now, Bob. It's pretty jerky anyways. I'm getting a couple comments in the chat that it's very jerky for sound and video. So I think the URLs are all pasted into the chat window now. So people can watch those at their leisure, I guess. And I think, Bob's still there, but he stopped sharing. So, Bob, it was pretty jerky. So I think that we'll probably just let people look at things on their own. You have anything else to wrap up your section there, Bob? And Bob is showing as muted.
Do you have my share back again?
Nope, not now. But I think it's really, really jerky, actually. And so I think the sharing of a video is probably not a great thing. Okay, so we'll carry on.
Okay, well, here's the next slide then. Is the share back
yep.
on your screen?
Yep.
Okay, so some of the great Playing for Change music videos include this list here, and I'm not going to read the whole list, but these are some of my favorites. And there's many, 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 many more on YouTube. So a great place to go for that.
All of these have been pasted into the chat window with the URLs, and this is slide as well.
Yeah. One of the great ones is in 2019, Playing for Change did their version of Canadian Robbie Robertson's influential song, The Wait, in honor of the song's 50th anniversary. Now, Robbie Robertson, at the time he wrote the song, was with the band, but he since had a very successful solo career. And the Playing for Change video includes Robbie Robertson himself and Ringo Starr from the Beatles as the drummer. And the video was produced by Robbie's son, Sebastian. And as part of this, they also produced a great Behind the Song two-part documentary. And the URLs are embedded there between the two parts. And it's a great documentary. It's not very long, so it's great to watch. Playing for Change has also established the Playing for Change band. And so they get together occasionally and do some international touring. And this brings artists of all backgrounds together in one place. And it helps raise money and awareness for the foundation. They produced a great documentary called A Cinematic Discovery of Street Musicians back in 2008 that won the Audience Award at the Woodstock Film Festival. There's lots more info at playingforchange.com. You can see lots more videos, get more info and stories. You can make a donation or you can buy a membership. And the membership start at US $5 a month or US $54 a year. And members get access to a lot of other special videos and other content. And you can also buy Playing for Change swag like t-shirts and CDs, hats, and etc. Most of their videos are available free on YouTube, and you can go onto YouTube and do a search under Playing for Change and come up with all sorts of stuff. You can also follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And there's more information on the organization itself on Wikipedia. And that's about it. So let me end my share there.
Okay, thanks very much, Bob. So we're at that point in the evening where we're asking for any other questions. I'll just remind you that a couple of questions were asked earlier. One was the better microphones for outdoor use with videography. And the other one was, what was the other one, Chris? I've forgotten what the other one was. Anyway, you know what it was. I'm sure you know what it was. Anyway, also, Chris has a couple of questions which came in which he wants to talk about. So we'll let him do that.
Yeah, okay. One of the questions that came in, which I thought was a great question, is that, if I find the right window, from Diane P., is there an email program that will show you that the receiver has read the email or the sender gets a receipt? And yes, but, is one of those things. Let me just do a share on my screen here, if I can find the control. Okay, share screen, and okay, there is a thing in most programs that allow you to request a read receipt. So here's Thunderbird, and so when I'm creating a new mail message in Thunderbird, under the options, there is an option, a thing where I can request a return receipt and a delivery status notification. The return, flags that you can get on mail, they can be honored, but they will not. Just the fact that you don't get a return receipt doesn't necessarily mean that it hasn't been received or read. The problem is that generally speaking, the receiving mail system has the ability to honor or not any of those requests for delivery or read receipts. So although you can request it in most programs, I think it's of limited use I, in particular, on my Thunderbird have it set so that if somebody requests a read receipt or delivery receipt, I am prompted to whether I want to send that receipt or not. And depending on the person and context, I quite often will just not send those receipts because some people turn it on as a default. And I don't know how they live with just, you know, getting flooded with delivery and read receipts. So most programs will allow you to request it, but just realize that it's the receiver that will decide whether to honor that or not. And so that's all I have to say on that. If anybody else has any other comments on delivery and read receipts in email, by all means, chime in.
Sorry, wouldn't spammers use that to check if your email was active?
Well, they can, but there are other ways that they can do it as well. But yeah, they could be requesting delivery and read receipts. But if you want to allow those going out automatically, you probably are also enabling other means that they can use, such as web bugs that are embedded, you know, one pixel in the email message that is ostensibly a graphic. And if you display graphics in your emails, then it can let the spammer know that you actually did bring up that email note for read. So there are a number of ways of doing it, but I just don't count on read receipts or delivery receipts at all because they're so fraught with difficulty in getting them honored.
I remember the second question now. One question was about the external microphone. The second question was installing a NordVPN on a television. Oh, yeah. And right. Bob had given a website for that, which might help. If anybody has any other information, that would be useful. Now, there's a question in the chat now about an LG3 phone. It has to be plugged in twice a day. Is there any point in getting a battery for it through Amazon? This is Lorraine. She's not sure how good that's going to be or whether they're even... Amazon things are a scam. Does anybody have any thoughts on that?
I have bought replacement batteries for my last phone, and I had fair degree of success on it. I think it's great that they actually can be changed, because my current phone, it's not a user serviceable item. And so if I wanted to get the battery replaced, which is starting to have a shorter life on it as it gets into its, fourth year, it would be really expensive for me to actually get the battery replaced on it now. Personally, I think that if you get one at a reasonable price, it's probably a lot cheaper than going to get a new phone.
Plus, you can also bring batteries with you so that if your battery runs out, you can just put it in, renew one in.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, good point. Yeah, that's really handy.
Yeah, Bob Walker here. I got replacement batteries at Amazon Canada for my Samsung smartphone. It takes about 2 or 3 minutes to swap a battery out, a little bit quicker once you get used to it. They were $14 each, and they were genuine Samsung batteries, so that's a pretty cheap way of doing it. For some of the newer phones, or if you have an iPhone, there are places, some of these kiosks at the various shopping malls can swap the battery out for you, but as Chris mentioned, it's somewhat more expensive.
And Tristan's making the point that if it's an old phone, you should keep in mind that it won't be getting security updates. So that's something you should consider, I guess.
We had another comment in the chat, which I thought was interesting, from Gillian Villeneuve, asking, are you all aware that your newspapers offer a receipt so you can claim something somewhere in your tax return? He hasn't done it yet, but he has his receipts. Tristan actually responded with a URL that explains the information, and it comes from Revenue Canada directly. So there, if anybody's interested in doing that, it says the information on the digital news subscription tax credit. And so the URL to that is in the chat window. If you're interested, pick that up. And we had a comment as well, I think it was from Tristan, when we were talking about backups, and in particular offsite backups, one of the better options out there now for non-free but very capable product is Backblaze. And I think I talked about Backblaze before. It comes highly recommended from a number of people that I respected. And one of the cool options about Backblaze is, you know, if you look at, you know, backing up or restoring terabytes of information, doing that over the internet is almost too painful to imagine. And Backblaze actually has an option where you can ship drives back and forth, and you can ship that information. They'll send you drives. You ship them, and they'll back up the information. And also, if you have to do a restore, if you want, they can ship you drives. You have to pay a pretty hefty fee to down payment. And so if you don't return the drives, they cost you quite a bit of money. But if you return the drives, I don't know if it's fully refundable or just partially refundable, but it's certainly an option if you have terabytes of information that you have to, in particular, restore. So Backblaze has some really great pricing and some other good policies on it as well. There's a number of other companies out there that are doing offsite backup. So shop around if you're interested in having something that is basically offload it to somebody else.
Okay, any more questions? We have a few minutes before the magic hour is up. While we're waiting for questions, I guess I'll go into the wrap-up slides. Which are right here. There we go. Right, so I got very excited last week and told you it was the last call for the free or the two-for-one membership deal. And Chris pointed out that we had this week to talk about it too, because the deal doesn't actually run out until tomorrow. And so if you're not a member, or if you know anybody who isn't a member that wanted to be a member, if you purchase a membership for $20, then that's a one-year membership. We're going to give you a second year absolutely free. So it really is two membership years for $20. I just remind you, if you are a member, you don't need to renew your membership because the board has extended everybody's membership. So as of tomorrow, or April 1st, I guess, your membership will be extended for a year at no charge. But this is the last call because tomorrow the deal runs out, and so we won't be talking about it next week. And it's also the last call, it's the really last call for the first of our tech talks. As Chris mentioned earlier, we're doing the first tech talk on Monday at 7 p.m., and it's the spring cleanup session, and we've got 10 different topics and 3 different presenters, and it's going to be a lot of information which should be useful to people. And as Chris mentioned, we've got things on backup, security, email, system performance, and basic disk cleanup. So lots of things that we've talked about before in Q&A, some of them. So you can either think of it as a refresher, or it's kind of a 101 on how to produce a fairly efficient computing system. Free for members. And again, if you're another member, you can sign up for $20. And if you sign up today or tomorrow, you get OPCUG membership for 2 years, and you have the ability to sign up for all of the tech talks at no charge, because now you'll be a member. Lots of reasons to join the OPCUG. Our next monthly meeting, I've talked about this last week, is on April the 13th. our April meeting, and we're going to be talking about office suites. And Chris and I are going to look at Microsoft Office and LibreOffice and do some compare and contrast and just see what we think are good options for people in all those things. So it should be fun. There's some interesting wrinkles in the two suites, which I'm sure we're going to talk about. Lorraine says, how do you pay for membership? And Chris says, you can pay by PayPal, or you can, if you have a PayPal account, or you can just use a credit card as a one-time payment for membership. Or you can even send one of those old-fashioned check things. We still accept those things too. Okay, and finally, next week, it will be our next Q&A session, Wednesday, April the 6th. As usual, if you have questions or you can answer some of the things that we've been asking tonight and haven't been fully answered, or you have topics that you want to share, and you saw some examples of quick and dirty things that people thought other people would be interested in, questions, answers, and topics to share, just send us a heads up to the suggestion box, and we'll be sure to include it in the next Q&A session. So, still have a couple of minutes before we hit the magic time frame. Any other questions, Chris?
We have nothing new in the chat as it stands right now. If I missed anything, my apologies, and please re-enter it into the chat or unmute yourself and ask it audibly. I think we've got everything.
Last second here.
Sure.
It's a sort of a share question combined thing. I came across a website app service called DeepL, and it's a translator service based out of Germany that apparently does a better job than Google Translate, which has a fair reputation. So that's my share. My question is, if there's any bilingual members of the group that would care to check it out and let me know what they think of the quality of the translation service, I'd be interested in knowing. My partner's a Francophone, and she says she thinks it does a better job than Google on the French to English and vice versa translations. But she has a hard time putting it into words. For a translation service. Anyway, it might be an interesting service for people to check out that need some translation work. There's a free tier, and then there's paid versions of it as well. Windows, Mac, iOS, and Android, even though the website does not show a link to the Android app, there is an Android app on the Play Store. I think it's a work in progress for the Android app.
Okay, thanks, Stuart. I just remind everybody that there was a lot of discussion in the chat window about income tax programs. So if you're interested in looking at that, certainly refer to the chat window content, which will be posted on the website later on tonight.
I know Alan said it earlier. He's interested in the higher speeds on the 417.
Oh, I'm just reading the article, yeah.
But remember, a long time ago, it was 70 or 120 kilometers was the speed limit.
Oh, yeah, but now we've got to look after the climate change, so you have to dial down the speed of it to save gas.
Yeah. The old double nickel.
Yeah, but back when it was 70 miles an hour, the cars didn't have as good a tires, didn't have as good a brakes, didn't have as good a handling, didn't have the airbag systems and all the rest. So the 70 miles an hour or 120 kilometers an hour is much safer now than it was back then. And the cars now get a lot better gas mileage than they did back then as well. So
Bob Gowan's pointing out 70 miles an hour is actually 113 kilometers per hour, so it's not quite 120.
Oh, okay.
But the big question is, can the GPS keep up?
Okay, well, that's it for me. Thanks, everybody. I hope everybody enjoyed the material we had tonight, and send in your questions for next week.
Thanks for attending, folks. We'll see you next week.
Recording stopped.
True.